kind of loud in my ear, so I think I might.
Blog Talk Radio.
I just heard myself.
Welcome, Long Beach, to another edition of Swoop's World right here at blogtalkradio.com. Swoop's World, where you get all you need to know about arts, culture, news, and happenings here in Long Beach. Our number, if you want to call in, is 917-889-7449. You can email us at swoopsworld@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Once again, you want to call in tonight, that number is 917-889-7449. Sit back and enjoy another edition of Swoop's World.
Hello, Long Beach, and welcome to Swoop's World, and glad to have you back here another Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. Peter, you with me?
I think so. You there, Swoop?
I got you. Peter's at an off-site location today, taking a little time off. And Ray, are you here?
I am here.
Okay, well, look at it. We got the whole team here. We got Ray Polk with another segment of The Buzz, and we're going to have the prosecutor-elect Doug Halbert on the air here in just a second, and going to get a chance to get to know him and get to know what his vision is for the new position he's going to be taking over. Anything been happening, Peter?
Not a whole lot. I'm in Laguna Beach. That's pretty cool.
That is really cool.
Vacation. Dropped off the kids with Grandma. So that's Grandma, who's in town from Canada. That's very nice. But other than that, not much. How about you?
No, man, just you know, a little busy today. Got back in the rowing center again today. Did some rowing with Jack from Powerhouse Fitness, who was a guest here a couple months ago, and he worked me hard, man. So it was fun.
Cool. Were you there with your son?
No, he decided he wanted to sleep in this morning, man.
Can't say that I blame him. It's summer vacation for him.
Yeah, he went yesterday, so you know, I got no complaints.
Very cool, man.
Very cool. Well, Ray, what's been happening with you, buddy?
I'm not quite as fit as you, Swoop. You know, I'm from the Bill Crosby school. If I don't attack my body won't attack me.
That's a good way to look at it. Hey, well, you know what we're going to do is we're going to invite the callers, give the callers a number again, and we're going to go to a quick break, and then we're going to bring our guest. I want to keep him waiting. He drove in from Las Vegas today, so I'm sure he's getting
wow.
kind of tired, but he's here in the studio with me. So if you want to give us a call, it's 917-889-7449. You can always reach us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. If you ever want to send us an email, it's swoopsworld@gmail.com. If you call in and if you have a question you want to talk, hit 1 on your phone, so that lets us know you have something to say. We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be right back after this.
On this week's Friends of Swoop's World segment, we spotlight two local businesses, Alfred's English Gardens and Richco Gates. Kathy Alford of Alfred's English Gardens was recently chosen by the City of Long Beach Water Department to help educate homeowners about alternative low-water garden options. Visit the website and click on eSmart Gardens for case studies and photo galleries of gorgeous gardens in Long Beach. Go to www.kathyalford.com. Richco Gates. Richco is a local builder that specializes in locally handcrafted outdoor woodwork built specifically for each client. Richco believes in doing a great job and having fun in the process. He builds gates in a variety of styles. Check out the photo gallery at richcogates.com for more information. If you'd like to become a friend of Swoop's World and have your business mentioned on our air, send us an email at swoopsworld@gmail.com. And back to our guests right after this.
You got a sense of humor. I like that. Welcome back to Swoop's World. And like I said, we're here every Wednesday night. Glad to have you with us. You're with Peter and Swoop, and we got Ray Polk from the Buzz segment. And let's introduce Doug Halbert, the newly elected prosecutor-elect, the city prosecutor here in Long Beach. Hi, Doug. How you doing?
Good evening, Swoop. Good evening, Peter. Good evening, Ray.
Hello. Hey, Doug. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Anyway, we're very happy to have you with us, and thank you for accepting this invitation to join us. And I know you've been elected, and you're going to take over here in the end of July, July 21st, I believe you said.
July 20th.
And so let's usually we start off with our guests. We're just trying to get to know them a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How long you've been in Long Beach? If you weren't from around here, how'd you end up here? And what led you to where you are today?
Well, I moved to Long Beach in 1991. I came here right after college, and I liked the community. I enjoyed living here quite a bit. My brother went to school here, went to Cal State Long Beach, and it was kind of a natural place for me to move. We both graduated college around the same time, and I just loved it down here. I eventually went to law school, and my first job after graduating law school was as a deputy city prosecutor in Long Beach. Working for Tom Reeves, I was one of the first deputies he hired when he was first elected about 12 years ago now. And I did that for a couple of years, and then I got I moved on to a private law firm that did both city attorney and city prosecutor work on a contract basis. So I became the contract city prosecutor for a number of cities. I prosecuted cases out in Palm Springs and in Lawndale, in Hesperia, in South Orange County. One thing I found everywhere I went is, you know, the Long Beach Courthouse is one of the most impacted courthouses I've ever seen, but it gave me a wide variety of experiences. So I've not only prosecuted here in Long Beach, but in about four other counties and a wide range of cases. But I ran for this office kind of, you know, not really thinking of ever running for office, but it just opened up. My predecessor here, Tom Reeves, decided to run for a different position. That created an open seat here, and I was approached by a number of people who remembered from when I was a prosecutor in this office and who knew me from Long Beach circles. I've also been involved in the community. I've been appointed to a couple different commissions and task forces, and it just seemed like the right time for me and my family and my life, and I decided to run for office, and I was successful. So,
excellent. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Ray.
Well, I thought, you know, I've heard some people refer to him as like the new Bobby Kennedy with those boyish good looks of his and the do-gooder prosecutor attitude. But I met Doug when he was in Tom Reeves' office. And back then, what was your issue, Doug? You'd been an activist for a long time, and I think that's really important for all of our listeners to understand is, I mean, Doug is definitely not one of these guys that jumped into a seat, an open seat, but he's been in the community, and there was something about the airport that you were interested in. You want to talk a little bit about what kind of got you involved in activism?
Well, I've been involved in Long Beach in a lot of different capacities. I was on the Airport Advisory Commission for 6 years during what I think could be described as, you know, one of the most volatile and pivotal times in the history of our airport. Before that, I was on the Long Beach Ethics Task Force. We were given a number of things to look at in the city, and we produced a report with a number of recommendations, some of which were taken, some of which were ignored. But that was probably the first or second appointment I received. Then later on, I was on after the Ethics Task Force on the Long Beach Airport Advisory Commission. Right after JetBlue came in and the number of flights at the airport tripled almost overnight, and there was all of a sudden talk about expanding the airport, and I was one of the only people, in fact, I think I was the only person living under the flight path on the Airport Advisory Commission at the time, and I found that I was kind of the voice for the neighborhoods, only because there was no one really speaking for the neighborhoods at that time, and I think I gave people a different perspective on at least some issues. You know, that was that was seven, eight years ago when that whole process started, but now I think we've come to a I hear an airplane going right over Swoop's headquarters here. We have to quiet down for a moment as the airplane passes. We have a great airport. We have a great airport staff. We're fortunate to have a noise ordinance that limits the number of flights by limiting the cumulative amount of noise that passes overhead. And this was kind of a pivotal time because a number of us were worried that if you overexpand the airport and accommodate far more flights than you would have to allow under the ordinance. That would create pressure for someone to challenge our ordinance in court or bring federal legislation to eliminate the grandfather protection that we enjoy, or a citizens initiative. You know, there are a number of things that could happen to our noise ordinance that people don't know about. Obviously, I'm an attorney as well, so I looked at it from a legal perspective, and I've worked for a number of other cities, so I could see it from the city perspective, I could see it from the resident perspective, and on the airport commission, I could see it from the commissioner's perspective. And although it was a long process and full of a lot of turmoil, I think the end result is actually a pretty good one. It seems like we're going to have an updated, modernized, upgraded airport without the size and capacity issues that made people nervous. At least I think that we've kind of arrived at that point, but it didn't happen overnight. It took 6 to 7 years of fighting and wrangling and looking at the true scoping and sizing of the airport, what's needed and what's not needed. And we kind of arrived at a good conclusion there. After the Airport Advisory Commission, I served on the Civil Service Commission, so I've also served in that capacity for the city. So, yeah, I guess I have been active, Ray, if that's your point.
Hey, Peter, you got it?
I do. For those of our listeners out there who may not know, what exactly does the city prosecutor do? What's the job? What does it entail? And from your perspective, what's going to be the biggest challenge that you're going to be facing coming into this office?
Well, what does the city prosecutor do? Long Beach is one of a handful of cities that prosecutes its own adult misdemeanors. Under state law, charter cities are given the ability to prosecute their own crimes, their own or state crimes that occur within the city limits. So Long Beach is a charter city. A handful of others have decided to do the same. The city of Los Angeles, for example, San Diego. There are maybe six or seven in the whole state that have decided to prosecute their own misdemeanors. So everything from batteries to DUIs, drug cases, graffiti, and then, of course, in addition to all the state law violations, any violation of the municipal code that's made a misdemeanor is also prosecuted by the city prosecutor's office. And that's kind of important because some of the most important issues to the people that live in Long Beach are in the municipal code. And so the city prosecutor is kind of the keeper of that code to make sure that local violations, in addition to state violations, don't go unpunished. But it's unique. So in other counties, the district attorney handles all cases. In L.A. County, it's a little different. The L.A. district attorney handles all felonies. And all misdemeanors except in the charter cities that prosecute their own, like L.A. and Long Beach, for example. Those cities that prosecute their own misdemeanors.
I have a question. Now, does the city prosecutor, I know in L.A., the city attorney's office, represents the city in civil suits? Is that the same in Long Beach?
Well, in Long Beach, we split those duties between two offices. In Los Angeles, there is one elected city attorney, and that city attorney is both the civil city attorney for Los Angeles and the city prosecutor for Los Angeles. Here in Long Beach, our charter says that there are two positions. One is purely a criminal prosecutor, and that's the city prosecutor. And the other one is an advisor to the council and to the city agencies, and also represents the city in civil disputes. And that's the elected city attorney.
Okay.
And that's Bob Shannon, who just got reelected.
Okay.
So he is the city attorney, and I'm the incoming city prosecutor.
Excellent. Now, with the misdemeanor, you had all the misdemeanor cases. What's the caseload? I mean, what type of caseload do we have here in the city of Long Beach?
Well, until I get in, I can't tell you for sure. I'm told there are about 10,000 cases a year. What I don't quite have at my disposal are the statistics of infractions versus misdemeanors, and how many of these misdemeanors don't really go through the city prosecutor's office. They may be direct file citations. There are a couple different ways cases can get into court, but I will tell you very few cases actually go to trial. So there's an awful lot of cases that get handled. Many of those cases get plea bargained, and if there's an arrangement that can be made between the defendant, the prosecution, and with the court's agreement, there's a plea settlement to the case, and it doesn't go to trial. I would estimate less than 1% of cases, probably far less than 1%, actually go to trial.
Right. Now, what do you foresee to be the number one thing you're gonna attack once you take office?
Well, it's hard to point to just one thing or create one thing as a priority. I will tell you one of the most alarming things in the city is the rise in gangs, and it's the problem is that kids are getting into gangs at such an early age. Gangs are more violent, I think, than they've ever been, at least in the recent history, the last couple of years of the city. They seem to be getting younger, and they seem to be getting more violent. And, you know, we've seen that in a rash of shootings, actually, in the last few months and in the last year here in Long Beach. And the solution is far more complicated than just prosecuting gang members. You obviously have to do that. But I think there's a role that the city prosecutor's office can play in intervention. I've had strong support from every board member on the Long Beach Unified School District Board and the superintendent to look at what we could do to keep kids out of gangs. The reason I think that's important is once they get into a gang and once they're in that culture, it's almost impossible to pull them out of it. So we have to do everything we possibly can to show kids at an early age the consequences of crime, how it affects not just them but their families, their neighborhoods, and really prevent them from joining the gang. Because once they're in the gang, there's not a lot we can do. And I'm sitting next to a law enforcement officer who I'm sure Officer Swoop here could give you his own perspective. But I do think we have to work very closely with our young kids, our middle school age kids, our high school kids. I actually won't prosecute them until they become 18 because the district attorney has jurisdiction over juvenile cases. But once they turn 18, they're under my jurisdiction. My goal is to keep kids out of gangs so that they never come under my jurisdiction once they turn 18.
Excellent.
At least that's one of my goals.
Ray. Ray, did we lose Ray again?
I was muting. Hey, you know, talking about gangs and youth, I just saw this crazy story about was it Kermit Washington? And anyways, he's ex NFL guy, but yeah, I think we had a triple shooting this evening in the city. It's really just kind of out of control right now. And then unfortunately, we have Long Beach Unified going through some budget cuts, and they don't have summer school, so. Whatever you can do, Doug, we're definitely need some answers on this. To go back to the Airport Commission, what other involvement does the prosecutors have with the airport and the airlines?
Well, there's actually very little involvement. Of course, the noise ordinance is part of the Long Beach Municipal Code. So when violations get to the point of misdemeanor prosecution, there's a referral to the city prosecutor's office. So it's possible for the city prosecutor's office to be involved in airport activities. I believe in the history of the office, there's only been one occurrence where the two have intersected, and the result was a consent decree involving JetBlue paying money to the Long Beach Library Foundation in lieu of criminal prosecution. Other than that, I don't think there's a whole lot of crossover.
Yeah, no, it was the Library Foundation I was getting at. I know Tom Rees has taken some shots on it, and there's some people supportive of that. But ultimately, what we have is a mechanism for us to enforce that noise ordinance. And, for whatever people think, it was the prosecutor's office that put that mechanism into place. So I'd have to commend Tom for that. As far as what is the role of the prosecutor's office when it comes to code enforcement?
Well, obviously, the Long Beach Municipal Code includes a number of provisions that deal with safe housing, sanitary conditions. Long Beach is one of the few cities that has its own health department. So the city has code enforcement officers that investigate And eventually, if they can't solve a code enforcement problem, it'll be referred to the city prosecutor's office for some type of legal action. Often it can be resolved without filing something in court. You really do want to avoid putting too many of those cases in front of a judge who already has a full docket. But sometimes you get slumlords, and you've got some that aren't going to abate the violations. And some of the violations are quite serious. They're life and health threatening. So you have to bring them to court and prosecute them, just like you would any other state code violation. In one particular case, back when I was in the Long Beach City Prosecutor's Office, I prosecuted a slumlord on the west side in your district there, Ray, the 7th District. And we got the defendant convicted on 17 counts of misdemeanors. He was put in jail for 13 months. The judge thought that was a pretty serious case. And I'll tell you, 13 months of jail time is more than a lot of people that commit more serious or at least more seemingly serious crimes spend in jail. But the judge sent this person a message because we were proactive on code enforcement. We told him that we only bring cases when they're serious and when we can't resolve it through office conferences and giving the person time to correct the violations. But there are some slumlords in town. I have to say they're the vast minority of the landlord population. But there are some that aren't going to do what they should do. They unless they feel there's a punishment that outweighs the profits they're making, they're going to continue to, for example, rent garages to families even though they have substandard electrical and safety conditions. They will do that because they're there to make money, and if it costs them more, then they will abate those violations. But if they can make profit by stuffing people into a house and so be the legal conditions, they'll do it.
You know what? Hey, Peter, I know you're up next, but we're going to go to our next break, and you can come in right after that. How's that sound, all right?
Sounds like a plan.
You listen to Swoops World on Blog Talk Radio. We're here every Wednesday night. You can always give us a call, 917-889-7449. We're here with Doug Halbert, the prosecutor-elect for the city of Long Beach, and we're going to go to a quick break and be right back.
Hey, Long Beach, you know that beat? And you know it's time for me to tell you about another friend of Swoops World. Well, I'm going to tell you about Ink Piece. Ink Piece sells environmentally responsible ink and toner cartridges for printers, fax machines, and copiers at prices from 30 to 70% below the major office stores. Owned and operated by our good friend Mark Hawkins. Mark's very active in the community, local business located at 3636 Atlantic Avenue inside the Copy House. Check out the website, www.classroomrelief.com. What better time with a time around Earth Day to go out there and get yourself some environmentally responsible products. Check out Ink Piece, 3636 Atlantic Avenue, inside the Copy House. And back to our show right after this.
Hey, Ray, can you hear us?
I just brought it back up completely. And welcome back to Swoops World. And like I said, here on Blog Talk Radio, we have a question from the chat line, and we'll get to Peter's. But I got a question from Night Vision, and I happen to know Night Vision is Michael Knight. And if you're a Blog Talk Radio fan and a Swoops World fan, you heard Michael Knight on our show about a month ago. Then we helped him out with a paranormal investigation in Long Beach about a month or so ago. And he's on every day, Monday through Thursday, at 3 o'clock. And he's usually interviewing some really cool independent bands. And like I said, Michelle Mangione's been on his show, and we'll be with Michelle on Friday. Michael Knight asks, he wants to know why local police are allowed to break ordinance laws and nothing is done, but if a citizen makes noise late at night, the police arrive.
I don't know. It sounds like selective enforcement there, but I'm not aware of any noise violations by officers that are going unaddressed.
Well, you know, he's
what is he talking about?
You know, it's probably something up there where he's, you know, so he spends a lot of time in Central California, so it's probably out that way. Peter, what'd you have?
So, Doug, I'm wondering, it sounds like you've done a lot of different types of jobs where you've represented a number of different cities in a variety of capacities. I'm wondering what made you want or what made you really want to put yourself out there in kind of the spotlight, the public light, and run for office? You know, and so what made you want to do that, and how do you perceive this being different from what you've been doing in the past?
He's crazy.
He's the boss now.
I'll accept both of those answers. There was actually one incident that made me start thinking about doing something more here in Long Beach. There was a shooting where a high school student was after a football game at the wrong place at the wrong time and caught a bullet, died. And when that happened, I mean, I think many of us opened up the newspaper and read about the death of Melody Ross, and we looked at that, and there was a family that had done everything they could to raise a girl right. I've got a daughter going into middle school. When I read that article, it just kind of affected me a little more deeply than I would have expected it to. That was still long before I knew this office was opening up, but right then I kind of sat down and I thought, I'm spending a lot of time making other communities nicer and safer and better, and I really enjoyed my time in the Long Beach City Prosecutor's Office, and I reflected on that, and it just got me thinking, there's got to be more I can do here close to home to make Long Beach a better and safer community. And I wasn't thinking of anything at the time. It was about a month after that incident that I read in the paper that Tom Reeves was leaving office, and I would not have run against Tom. Tom Reeves gave me my first job out of law school, and I've remained friends with him, and I would not have run against him, but I didn't hear anyone else stepping up. There was only one other candidate announced, and I thought I would be the best candidate, and I decided to run and was fortunate to have the backing of a number of people, and the rest is history now, but it wasn't something I thought about really long. It was just kind of happened quickly, in maybe a month span. I started thinking about it, and the light became clear, and I followed the light.
Excellent. And you know, I was looking at your website there, and you've always been on the prosecutorial side.
Yeah, I've never been a criminal defense attorney, and there are some people that do one and then the other. I think it's more common that a prosecutor will get a lot of experience, for example, in the district attorney's office, and then go to the defense side. I think Johnny Cochran actually was a DA, deputy DA at one time, but a number of high-profile and very successful defense attorneys were prosecutors first, and I've never thought about being a defense attorney. Not that there's anything wrong. I mean, we need defense attorneys to represent defendants. But I've always felt that it was more fulfilling to work on the side of the people, and on, you know, to keep community safe. That's always been my goal and what's motivated me. So
yeah.
No, I've never veered off that path.
Right.
Ray, do you need a criminal defense lawyer?
Actually, come on, I think they're the salt of the earth, but
you have the right to me.
Doug, I mean, I think he's been pretty modest. He's one of those guys that, you know, the airport issue, the commission involvement, the city service, every time we talk, he speaks from that resident perspective. And I think, you know, it's somewhat unique for Long Beach to have a city prosecutor, because a lot of the cities have that role rolled up into a city attorney. There's some discussion about, you know, doing the same thing in Long Beach, but I personally think if you're going to have somebody that's directly elected by the community, the prosecutor is probably the person you want to do have that in that role, because they're supposed to, in my opinion, reflect those community values. And does really, you know, whether it be the airport ethics or whatever, just kind of comes from this very, I think, a direct, you know, resident type of perspective. I don't I hope the office doesn't change that, Doug. But I mean, I commend you from at least reaching out to me when you needed to, get your message across. And I think that type of interaction with the community is really what the prosecutor's office is about. Were you involved any with the Impact Project? And under the code enforcement thing, have you had discussions with the, I forget the organization, but there's a new group out there. I think it's Citizens for, they're the criminal code enforcement folks. Have you talked to them any?
I received a proposal, and I think it was provided to the council a few weeks ago. And they asked that city staff come back with a response. I think it's due back in about a month or so. I haven't taken office yet, and I wanted to defer until I do take office to the person who's currently in there. He may have some thoughts, and I'm certainly not going to want to step on his toes until I'm the one in office there. But I appreciate your comments about my sensitivity and awareness of the neighborhood issues. Ironically, in my professional career, I was working for many cities, so I could see the city perspective. But living in Long Beach and dealing with a number of commissions as a resident appointed to serve on a commission, so I wasn't the staff. I wasn't the city staff to the commission. But I do think I have a resident sensitive viewpoint of things more than anything else because sometimes the resident voice isn't heard. On the airport, I would voice the position of the community and the neighborhoods, mostly because I didn't think anybody else was voicing that. And I thought there was a void out there that needed to be filled, and at least people had to hear the other side of each argument. And so I thought it was my duty at those meetings to kind of convey how other people might see this issue. I mean, the Airport Advisory Commission for years had been users of the airport, pilots, employees of airlines, and those who owned property on or near the airport. And they voiced the opinion of the airport business community more than anything else, but that's just because that was their background. And so on occasion, I gave the viewpoint of the residents living under the flight path because I thought that they needed to hear that more. But I have to say, when two sides sit down and explain how they feel, it opens up the eyes, and I do think many of them feel differently now than they did when they were first on the commission. I want to take a little bit of credit for that, but I think we all serve a role here as residents in Long Beach to make the community better. And we have a wonderful city, by the way, with a lot of residents who spend a lot of time trying to make Long Beach a better, safer community to live, work, and raise a family. There are many people out there doing this, and I look forward to working with them. I do consider it working with them. And I do expect to hear from them when they have ideas like this group that you mentioned, Ray. I'm not going to voice any opinions tonight, but once I'm in office, I certainly will work with them. And anyone who's willing to work hard to make Long Beach a better, safer place, I think they'll find that I'm there to listen.
Hey, Peter, you have one last question?
Not really. I was wondering, I guess the big thing is where do you see yourself going from here? I guess that's it. Knock it off. My wife's making funny noises over here.
From,
grief.
From Swoop's headquarters, I plan to go home.
There you go. That's not Swoop's headquarters. Those are my headquarters.
I plan to get sworn in on July 20th. I plan to take office, and I plan to work as hard as I can and do as much good for the people of Long Beach as I possibly can.
We really appreciate Doug spending some time with us today. He hasn't made it home. He had a long trip, and he was gracious enough to stop in here at Swoop's World and sit down and take a few questions. And we're going to wrap this up with him right about now. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we go to our next break?
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Swoop. I appreciate the opportunity to explain a little bit more about myself. And I've got 4 years to let the voters know more about me, but I really do hope that people stay engaged and stay involved in the community and stay involved in city government. Long Beach really is a great place. A lot of people don't know that. More importantly, though, I think it can be a lot greater. Working together, I think there are a lot of people making Long Beach a better place, And I really think the Long Beach of tomorrow is going to be even better than the Long Beach of today. So just keep doing your good work, you guys, and keep in touch with me and let me know next time I can come on, okay?
Absolutely, and you always have an open invitation. Thanks for stopping by, Swoops World. What we're going to do right now is we're going to play a Michelle Mangione song, What is a Saint? As you know, some of you, like I just mentioned, Swoops World will be out at First Fridays this Friday night, and we'll be at the Mirage Cafe where Michelle Mangione will be playing and hosting her First Fridays songwriter showcase. So we're going to go to a quick break, and I'll be back in just a second.
Thanks, Doug.
Are you ready? To be someone to a stranger, of less fortune, would you offer up your smile just for the love of it? What is a saint to you? Are you willing to be
And that was Michelle Mangione of What Is a Saint? And like I said, Swoops World will be out at First Fridays this week, broadcasting from the Michelle Mangione show at the Mirage Coffee House. And, well, it's Mirage Mediterranean Grill now. And we were just happy enough to have Doug Halbert, the prosecutor-elect for the city of Long Beach. And Peter and Ray, you still with us?
I'm here.
Hey, you know, I got a chance to chat with him during the break there. He seems like a really decent guy. I think he's going to do a great job, and he's got the right attitude and a very good sense of humor.
Yeah, yeah. Did I catch right that he lives in the Cowhide, Pickering Knolls area? Is that right?
You know, not only that.
He lives
go ahead,
in
Ray.
He lives
Ray,
in
you're
the,
breaking up.
Area. Oh, hang on. let me. I'm told this area is better. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
You're here? Yep.
All right. Now I think he lives in the Los Altos area. He's under the arrival path over there in the.
Okay. Very cool. You know what, Peter? There's a connection. I'll tell you. He's got a connection to you and Tracy. So I'll tell you about that in a little bit.
Actually, I just found that out myself.
Okay.
And my wife asked, "Who are you talking about?" And I said, "So and so." And she said, "Oh, that's such and such." So yeah, there his apparently his wife and my wife know each other.
Yeah, he's something with with the school together. So
yeah.
Hey, what else? What else we got this? What else we got tonight, man?
Hello, there you go.
Hey Ray, man, you're gonna have to figure that out, brother.
All right. I just
got word from Michael Knight. I put out that he's on the air every night, every weekday, Monday through Thursday at 3:00. He's actually putting the show on hiatus until July 6th, he said. And when he comes back, the show is going to be a lot of changes. And he said the Michael Knight show is going to be on Sundays and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Pacific time. He'll have a new show starting July 6th at 7 p.m. Dude, slow down on the typing. I can't read that fast. But, he said, so check him out starting July 6th at 7 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio, the Michael Knight Show. Okay, got that taken care of. Also, we'd like to give a shout-out to our buddies from LB Food Review, Chris and Taylor. You know, they're here every other week. And Chris is headed to Cabo for a few days, so we hope he has fun and stay safe, man, because I know that's going to be a crazy town.
Yeah, hopefully he returns.
Exactly. So, Ray, I was going to ask you, what's next for Ray after he leaves his assignment at the 7th District?
You got to ask me that. I don't know, Swoop. You know, we started talking because there's just so much good stuff happening in the community right now. I think that's kind of where the action is. I mean, over the past 8 years, I've talked to a number of folks, and, you know, the city has changed significantly. I mean, when we first took office, there wasn't a lot of communication and outreach. I mean, now we have 7th District residents on almost every charter commission. There was an RDA, merger because a disconnect with the community, and now the RDA has a communications officer. The port, we can all experience the port's outreach assault. Every billboard, bus, it's bad enough we got to breathe the air, now we got to get the visual blight from the port. But that's all good. That's outreach and that's community involvement. So I think the city has changed significantly while we were there, and I'm just kind of looking for opportunities right now where community folks are starting to kind of pick up those areas that the city is really not doing, and then shows like this, Connected Corridor, Antonio, Creativity Network. I mean, those are all things that are happening, with city involvement, but for the most part, they're community initiatives, Catalyst. And that's why I was excited to get Doug on board. I mean, he's really one of those examples of a community guy that's getting involved in the city. And, I might be an example of a city guy, wanting to get more involved in the community. So that's kind of what I'm looking at right now.
Oh, it's good, and it's a good thing, and now I guess another. Hey, Peter, what's this? Is this the last one for the night? This is the 946, 948 flight?
Nope, there'll be one more after that.
All right, then. you know, it's good. It's good to have people, you know, good people involved in the thing, in the community. You know, what you see a lot of times is you see a lot of the same familiar faces, a lot of the same conversations happening, which is not a bad thing. But it's good to see the more people get involved and newly elected people
sounds,
with the passion.
Hey, Swoop, that sounds like our PTA meetings. Yeah. There's like about eight or nine of us that we do like everything.
Yeah.
So we need to. That's the one thing. You always need to expand on that. You need more involvement, more of those people.
Exactly.
You know, there's two type of people in this world, Peter, and those are people who follow city council issues, and the other type are people who follow PTA issues. Hey, and for some reason, those two worlds rarely meet, man. You'd be surprised how many times, you know, I go to a school site or something and tell them about, you know, a city council. I mean, you know, Long Beach Unified and the city works on some joint use projects, particularly with like Cesar Chavez and, you know, our school sites and our park sites. But, you know, connecting those two dots, getting, you know, PTA folks. I mean, when the PTA sued on the airport issue, that was like one of the first times that they got directly involved, and it was because of the airport.
Right.
I don't think, you know, Mary Stanton and Felton Williams have been pretty much silent on that whole issue. And if it wasn't for the PTA, we probably, you know, wouldn't have seen much of them. But, you know, definitely. And, you know, with Kelly and the farmer's market, I mean, she had been pursuing that thing for like 8 years. And I don't know what brought the school around, but, you know, they generally do not have a very receptive audience when it comes to school issues. So, but I think those things are changing, and I think the farmers market is, you know, a great example of what a community leader, you know, could do, and bringing those two entities together, the school and the city. I mean, otherwise, you know, we generally meet the same night. I mean, there's people would be shocked what kind of disconnect there is between the school and the city, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you from a personal experience that the PTA people, the PTA moms, not that they're all moms because obviously I was there, their big focus is always on their kids. And so if it affects their kids, they get involved. And they're hyper-involved with their kids. But once – and there's often a disconnect, as you said. They don't see the difference, or they don't often see the bigger picture because they're so focused on the school or the kids or the program. And that bigger picture, like the city, doesn't directly – they just don't see the connection, so they often don't know what's going on. And that's in my experience.
You know, my daughter at dinner the other night suggested, and I think this is probably going to be our next guest, is somebody from education. You know, the schools are taking some massive hits in the budget cuts. It's summer vacation, but, you know, people are going to have to wake up and realize – you know, what's happening in the school sites, particularly when they go back to schools. I mean, we don't have summer school this year.
Yeah.
I don't know when the last time that happened. But, you know, it's not going to be business as usual. So, you know, hopefully we'll get a representative either from, I think, Taub. And if not Taub, you know, somebody involved in education. But I think people need to be prepared for the coming year. It's
going to
be
cool, yeah.
We got a caller on the line, and we're going to bring this caller up and see what they got. Caller from the 661, you're on the air.
Hey, Swoop, it's me, Michael.
Hey, what's up, Mike? How you doing, man?
Pretty good. You know, I missed a little bit here in between about the school thing that was coming on, but I wanted to say, you know, I really enjoyed Doug when he was on. I really liked his sense of humor. I thought it was funny. You know, I that's one of the reasons why I posed that question in the chat room. I just wanted to see what kind of reaction I would get, and I really liked his reaction to it, and thought he was, you know, he was like more like a normal person than, you know, a lot of these politicians around.
Yeah. You know, he's got a great sense of humor. He's got a good mind for the issues. You know, he and I had some conversations off the record in between bricks, and you know, he's a sharp guy. He's got a vision, and I think he's going to do well. You know, the city prosecutor's office in any city that has one, I know the city attorney's office in L.A. is usually just inundated with a lot of just crap lots of times, and they got to weed through that, find the cases that are prosecutable or worth prosecuting, or come out with some solutions to a lot of things. But you know, it's one of those jobs. You know, as Peter always says, you know, why would you take that job? You know, you know, he looks like he's going to be the right man for the job. I don't know much about I forget who he ran against. I don't know much about him, but just sitting here talking to him and he's kind of picking his brain a little bit. I think he's going to do well.
Yeah, I was really impressed, you know, listening to him talk and such. I think he's going to be great for Long Beach. I really do. Now, you guys were talking something about there was not going to be summer school this year.
Ray was mentioning there's some places there and there are no summer school. There is not summer school.
What was the question?
He was asking about summer school.
Oh, no, I don't think there's summer school is not in session this year. There is a project with the California Endowment at three different park sites that's just getting off the ground. But what I heard this morning was we do not have summer school. And that's the type of disconnect that I'm talking about. You know, there are summer youth programs that if, you know, we didn't get any indication that there was going to be a bunch of kids that normally are, you know, could be in school. So we have to prepare for that, you know, and that type of communication I think just doesn't really exist between the city and the school. You know, they do what they have to do, and then we respond when we find out about it. But there's a lack of coordination. So, I mean, let me know. But from what I heard was there is no summer school this year.
Wow, that's going to put a lot of pressure on the city for some of their programs, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we have a summer higher youth program, but that's a lot of kids out on the street. I mean, you know, it's like Patrick O'Donnell likes to say, a tired kid is a good kid, and there's a lot of kids with too much energy on right now.
Well, you know, as we all know, as parents of kids who are out of school during the summer, you know, my son doesn't normally go to summer school, but it's available there. But he's in camps and soccer camps and this camp and Peter can tell you we're always trying to find things that they can do to you know, that's relatively inexpensive. But you know, for parents who are you know, working full time and they got to leave those kids, you know, unattended, or can they afford to have them you know, daycare for them or something? You're right. There's a lot of kids on the street, man.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know,
and I think my understanding is that I think there is some summer school, but it's only for kids who need it in order to graduate or something like that. So it's a very, very limited. Whereas before, you could take summer school to, like, you know, to expand to new or to redo other programs. Now, if I remember hearing right, the only summer school available is for those people who are those kids who, like, need it in order to pass high school. So you're talking about very, very small numbers.
So what you're saying, kids that are behind, not necessarily K, you know, like first through junior year of high school, they're out of luck, is it pretty much then, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. That's what I heard, yeah.
Wow, you know, that's the new program. It's the All Kids Left Behind education program.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's tough, man. But you know, it's tough all around because you have, you know, they laid off a bunch of teachers and you know, it's a domino effect, you know? It's a total domino effect. If you don't have the teachers there for them, and even during the regular school year, you got class sizes increasing, which can't be good for the kids.
No, definitely not. My daughter's going into kindergarten and we're being told that because class size reduction was going on, she, like my son went through, he was in a class of 21, I believe, and next year my daughter will be in a class of at least 29 or 30. Can you imagine?
As a kindergartner.
Kindergartner. Yeah, 29 or 30 kindergartners in the classroom? I mean, that's Wow. I wouldn't want to be a teacher in that class, I'll tell you that. That'll be mayhem.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, that's tough. And
there's
that,
a
like,
chance, no, then there's also a chance of there being combo classes, kindergarten, first grade combo classes, depending on the school and like 1,000 different variables, you know, at this point. Nobody knows for sure. But that would be, as if it wouldn't be tough enough to have 30 kids that age, to have a mix of 30 kids that are a little older and a little younger, that would just be a real, from a teaching point of view, I got to believe that would just be a nightmare.
Yeah.
I got a question. Why is it that, and I don't know, this is why I'm asking, why is it that it seems like when the state gets short on funds that they cut so much from the schools, when I think that's probably one of the more important programs, why don't they cut more from other programs?
Well, Ray, you're probably in a position to give a educated guess on that one.
Well, they're cutting from every program. It just happens that school programs are predominantly funded by the state. You know, most of it's like our street repairs. Our street repairs, local funds are actually gas tax. So what the state's done in the past was they've withheld gas tax. So when people say, how come we haven't repaired our streets in 4 or 5 years? Well, you know, every time you go to pay at the pump, which happens to be our greatest revenue generator, you know, retail sales tax generates less than a penny back for every dollar you spend. But gas tax is something that's supposed to come back to the city. And so when the state's broke, they basically say, we're not going to give you that money. So they withhold that. It just happens that the majority of schools and health funding, you know, the other thing that's on the cutting blocks is mental health. The county has the responsibility for health. But it's you know, through federal and state dollars that the county gets the resources for that. So it's just that a disproportionate or a majority of education funding comes from the state. But if you look across the board, they are cutting every program. And, you know, we did an agenda item recently to support the Guidance Center, which offers mental health at our schools. I mean, you take a look at a program that's getting a cut. I mean, if the school's getting a cut and health care is getting a cut, a service provider that provides health care in the school, I mean, it's pretty bad out there. And, you know, the governor's proposed a all-cuts budget, so it's across the board. There's no new taxes, and the legislature is, you know, suggesting that there has to be some sort of tax. And they've already, I think recently the speaker, John Perez, said he wasn't going to touch redevelopment because he came out of the CRA, or the Community Redevelopment, in Los Angeles. But, you know, 2 years ago when they started taking more local funds, that was one of the funds that they raided. And, again, that was one of those state pass-throughs. It's local revenue goes to the state, and then the state gives it back. Well, they took a lot of that back. It's just that our education funding comes from the state. So, you know, until there's some sort of restructuring and how we want to, you know, create that revenue stream, every time the state goes, you know, cries, you know, broke, gets the first hit, it's going to be education. It's unfortunate.
Wow.
Right. Now, how can the state take away the funds that are supposed to go to the city? Is some sort of legal recourse that the city can, you know, make sure that they get those funds that are supposed to be dedicated? Because, you know, like me as a taxpayer, I go out and I pay for specific things that are supposed to go, you know, that portion of the tax is supposed to go to the city. I'm expecting it to go to my city where I live. So is there sort of legal recourse that the cities can do when the people decide they just want to take the money or they don't want to give it out because they don't have enough for themselves? You know, why are the cities, and especially like Long Beach and such, suffering for the state's poor job of being able to handle money?
Well, the sources of revenue that I'm talking about the state taking back are generally state revenues that are allocated to the city. So it's technically state money. However, there was, you know, we did pass that initiative. Before, the state was taking money left and right and to balance their budget, and, you know, these just wouldn't give it back. But we passed an initiative, I think it was 1A, I forget the number, that required the state to, you know, basically stop taking those money, and if they did take money, they'd have to declare a fiscal emergency, and they'd have to give that money back. There are mechanisms, and when they try to go after RDA funds, redevelopment funds, there were lawsuits. And so these things are challenged in court. There are mechanisms in place. The city got an exemption for some, taxes that the state was, trying to get from us. The short answer, it's kind of like I was at a council meeting once and somebody said, how can the city do that? How can we, like, waive fees for a city development? Well, we're the city.
Right.
They're the state, man. We're the government. We're here to help, So, when they're the ones writing the rules, if it wasn't for that voter initiative, they're the ones that write the rules of what is and what isn't state funds. We have subsidence money that's been set aside for our oil wells. That's Tidelands that we talked about a few weeks ago. That's state money. If the state wants to come in and say, oh, by the way, your Tidelands fund that you guys kind of saved for a rainy day, it's kind of raining right now. We're going to take that back. Alan Lowenthal has been pretty aggressive and Betty Carnett in trying to protect those funds. But technically, these are revenues that are, either pass-throughs or some sort of state revenue. And if it happens to be local revenue, we go to the courts and we fight them on it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, Mike, thanks for calling in, brother, and we're looking forward to see what the new show sounds like.
All right, thanks. You guys have a great one now.
All right, you
good
too,
Mike.
Brother. Hey, Ray, I heard today that the next council meeting, the mayor is going to be putting together his recommendations for the Blue Ribbon Committee on the arts funding. You know anything about that?
No, I mean, the last time I heard about Cordon Bleu, there was some sort of cooking contest. Peter might be on that commission.
Peter, doubt it.
Peter's going to be on a new commission. Actually, Peter, I forgot to tell you.
Yeah.
Doug, when he was leaving, he said that he is need some information on an entry-level road bike, and I told him I would put you guys in touch.
Ah, there you go. Well, I can that I can help people out with. Blue ribbon panels, I don't know much about.
Absolutely. Well, hey, we just got a little bit of time left. We'll probably get out of here a little early tonight, but what's the word on the World Cup, man? Peter, all your picks and stuff seem to have fizzled out, so where are you headed now?
Yeah, man, obviously I didn't know what the hell I was talking about. Chile I always said was a long shot, but they got hammered. I really thought England was finally going to do it, so honestly, whatever I'm saying, I'm just making up now. I have seen I watched the Spanish game versus Portugal, and I hate Portugal, the team, Portugal. So I was glad to see that happen because I just couldn't stand Ronaldo and the Portuguese team. The Spanish team I like a lot, but based on the games I have seen, Argentina, wow, they look – I just don't know who could beat them. The Germans look
good. No one
can. No one can. The Germans look good and the Brazilians look good, but, if I was a betting man, I sure would be putting my money on Argentina at this point, although Brazil I would not count out because they still don't look like they've really played hard yet. They're winning games and they're like, that wasn't super impressive, but at the same time, they come off the field and it looks like they're just, they only gave like 70%. So, and I think the way the brackets work, if Argentina wins their next game and Brazil wins their next game, I think they might be playing each other. I think if I looked at that right. But either way, you're down to a few teams. It's going to get interesting now.
Germany only looked good because they were playing England, dude.
Yeah. That's true. But, the thing about the German team is, for the first time in a while, like I remember the last couple of World Cups watching them, they were efficient, they won games, but they were about the most dull team to watch. And this last game, I watched them play England. Yeah, they were playing England, but at the same time, actually this is the second Germany game I'd watched. They look like a different team. They look like they play in a totally different manner. They're definitely more interesting to watch at this point than they were last, 4 years ago, I think. But still, I put my money – at this point, I would definitely put my money on Argentina.
Yeah, I like Argentina. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, Portugal looked awesome when they played – who did they play? North Korea. They scored scored seven goals, and they never scored a goal after that. You know, he might be right. Germany looked good because they're playing England. I like Argentina, man. You're right, Brazil. Brazil's been, you know, they've been walking tall for a long time now, and I don't know. Have they played anybody that's really given them a challenge yet?
Not really. I mean, Chile was kind of maybe the first. They played Portugal, but Portugal just, you know, sucked in and played defense the whole time, so it was a dull game. I think both of them were kind of guilty, but Portugal was more guilty of that. So that was if the group stage had been at stake, that could have been a premier game, but since all they either one of them needed was a tie, that's what they got. So yeah, Chile played Brazil like a year and a half ago and played them to a draw, so there was a chance that maybe, but really they were outclassed, obviously. Yeah, that's the thing is Brazil really hasn't played an opponent of the highest caliber yet where the game counted. So it still remains to be seen, like, which team's going to show up in that game.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, every time I've seen Argentina, they've looked good. They've looked awesome, man.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely – but, you know, Spain's another team that could possibly just hold their own against some of these big teams.
Cool.
Are you leaving the motherland for South America, dude?
What's that?
Are you leaving the motherland, Europe, for South America now?
No. I've always been a big Brazil fan, so I got no problem there. But I thought England was gonna finally get their shit together this time around. But obviously, that was not the case.
What is the deal with? I mean, yeah, I think one of the things I heard was like, okay, you know, they all play in the Premier League, but maybe they're just not good enough because, I mean, Germany beat them bad. I mean, they were like...
Oh, bad. Yeah.
They didn't have the pace. They didn't have... They just weren't there. I mean, you know, and it's almost like, you know, I think about the American teams. I don't know how you feel about, you know, how far the American team got. I mean, they were going to win, but, you know, Ghana beat them twice. So,
yeah.
You know, and our best player, I mean, Donovan had a great, you know, cup, but, you know, the guy was on the bench. And so I know some people are going, well, maybe because of, you know, Germany or England's just not that good of a team. I know a lot of the top players in the Premier League are imports. So, is the league or is England after 48 years going to realize we've got the Premier League, but our best players are from other places? They're not exactly exporting players.
Well, no, I think that's true to a large degree. The other thing to consider here is that of the English team was kind of an older team. You're looking at guys like Terry and Gerrard and Lampard. They're all, in soccer terms, old. And the only really young star that they had was Rooney, and he didn't show up. And you got to wonder how much of that wasn't necessarily his fault. I think part of the problem with England is that this crop, so to speak, was in their prime 4 years ago, where they also blew it. And so I think part of it is, yeah, the Premier League's importing and not exporting. But I also think that maybe they are like the Italians, where they needed to look to a younger generation, and they didn't. I mean, because all those guys are Carragher's another one, are James, even the guy who got replaced Green. All older players in their 30s. So I think that is definitely part of the problem. Young legs definitely are carrying the teams right now.
You know, one of the talking heads that was, you know, in between, you know, halftime and stuff like that and pregame was saying that one of the problems with England's team is they're all good players individually or on the teams that they came from, but they don't gel well together in like these cup teams, you know, like these all-star team type things. They just don't play well together. It takes them a while to get, get their act together, and by that time, you know, they're already out of it.
Well, I also think a lot of these guys, you know, these are like Liverpool and Manchester United and Chelsea. That's like taking a player off of the Yankees, off of the Red Sox, and then off of the Dodgers, and expecting all these guys to get along. You know, that wouldn't happen here. I mean, those guys wouldn't necessarily get along right away. They're going to take some. These guys are guys that when they're with their teams, hate each other and go to great lengths to beat each other. And now, and they're the stars in all of their own teams, and now they've got to all play nice together, and there's some giant, giant egos.
Hey, man,
and that's
we pull it off every year. Granted, it's just for one game, the All-Star game, but they get along for that game.
for one game. You know, and that's the advantage to the U.S. team. None of those guys are really big household names, except for maybe Landon Donovan, maybe. And so those guys, I think, come together, and you see that. For all their faults, they do play pretty well as a team. Now, as a team, they fell short, but, I mean, you never, ever see England play together. They're all – it's like that's 11 guys out there all on their own team. You know, it's 11 different teams out there competing against one other side. So I think that's a big also part of, and I also think that's the problem that happened with France too. Those guys never played together as a team, man. Those guys were horrible.
Those guys never even showed up, man. I mean, I think Sean
could
have played a good game against France.
Yeah, no, that was ugly. France wasn't, England wasn't quite as bad, but still, I think it was the same sort of problems going on there. One coach trying to bring people together that didn't necessarily want to be together. Of course, in France's case, the coach was a nut job, so that didn't help anything either.
That's true.
Well,
that's true.
You know, I got to tell you, man, I used to live in France, and, you know, before the Blues won the World Cup 8 years ago, right, they were still, I mean, Michel Platini was still like yesterday's hero. And, you know, as much as it pains me for the French to implode as bad as they did, I think there's some, like, karma out there for them and Italy to play such an ugly final 4 years ago and, you know, take a final to penalty kicks. Give me a break.
Yeah.
So,
well, and I think France's problem is maybe there's some karma there with how they got into the whole World Cup because, you know, Ireland should be there. With
you're going to go to the legal thing now? Come on.
Hey.
I'm like the hand of fate, dude.
The hand of fate. I don't know, man. Once? But the guy had two touches. Even Maradona only had one touch.
Hey, you know, it's like
that Brazil goal. There was that one Brazil goal. The guy damn near caught the ball and rolled it in. He had so many touches.
You know, guys, that's just the way sports go, man. I could still be crying about the tuck when Brady dropped the ball and we recovered the fumble and they said it was a forward motion and the Raiders missed the Super Bowl. So you know, you can't go back to that. You know, it happened. Move on.
All right. That still doesn't excuse what's his name Robbins in that tequila binge of his. So you know.
Hey, Ray, you mentioned something earlier I was going to ask you about. You mentioned the Kermit Washington. What was the thing you had on that? What was the thing you read about that?
Oh, it was crazy. You know, NFL guy, right? He lives in South Central?
Yeah, I worked that case, actually.
You worked that case. So he was a Pop Warner coach.
Uh-huh.
And one of the kids that tried out for the team that he just overlooked and apparently didn't make the team or just wasn't that involved ends up to be a teenager that killed his mom.
Oh, man.
And, yeah, and so, you know, he obviously devastates him and, you know, he goes to trial and somebody tells him, you remember who this kid was? And he's like, no. He said, well, remember that kid that tried out for the team and, you know, just didn't work out? And he's like, you got to be kidding me. So the kid ends up, you know, I think he's on death row right now. It's basically this gang hit that was like an accident. The guy hits the wrong house and hits Kermit Washington's family's house.
Yeah,
so
it was an arson murder.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And so now Washington, after, you know, the loss of his family and his mother, basically just, you know, checks out. And recently, I forgot how it happened, but, you know, he gets married, he gets remarried, and ends up adopting some kids from Haiti and kind of takes this perspective as, you know, that was his second chance, or, you know, things to kind of, you know, fate giving him a second opportunity. But I forgot how the relationship between him and the kid that, you know, the teenager, the gang member that, you know, killed his mom, and it was, he basically says, you know, it was kind of his, after he adopted the kids from Haiti, it was kind of his way of, you know, believing that his mom was giving him the second opportunity. And then, of course, he's on the verge of adopting this kid, and the earthquake hit. So he's like, you got to be kidding me. And so, you know, finds out that, you know, he was going to adopt one kid, and as he's going to go pick the boy up, he finds out that they've got siblings. And so he basically gets his, you know, kind of second opportunity or second shot at, you know, having a family and everything. But the irony is, you know, that kid that he overlooked in Pop Warner ultimately, you know, comes around and, you know, makes his, obviously, you know, tragic circumstance in his life.
Yeah, yeah, it's horrible, horrible, horrible situation. Yeah, one of these is, we'll talk about it.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, it is horrible.
It was one of those ESPN Outside the Line story on Sunday night. It was just one of those stories that you're like, wow. You know, I mean, it was positive. I hope I don't end the show on like a negative note. But it's the end. It was basically about Washington and really just a positive message about, you know, making sure you take care of those people. Just don't overlook people that come across your life, you know, and then people, you know, pass through and we all learn something from them. And in this case, you know, this was a kid that, you know, ultimately affected, you know, what he has now as a family. So, I mean, it was a positive message.
Yeah, you know, the thing is I didn't see the show you saw. I don't think his mother was the intended, right or wrong. I mean, it's obviously wrong what they set out to do. But it's just definitely the wrong house. It's a bad situation.
And he was really bad. I mean, he was really torn, and, you know, he talked about vengeance, and, you know, that's what it was projected in the story, was they got the wrong address, went to the wrong house.
Yep. Not that there was a right house, but it wasn't the guys they were trying to seek retribution on. You're right. So. Yeah, it's a horrible thing, man. And the thing is, you know, like Doug was talking about it. You know, you gotta catch these kids when they're young. You know, by the time they're 18, by the time they're 14. I mean, well, the thing is a lot of these gang members are in gangs and they don't know why. All they know is their dad was in the same gang or their cousin was in the same gang, and then generation before them. Especially when you start talking about a lot of the LA gangs, a lot of the LA gangs are generational, so. You know, it's got to be something to do and something done about it. And when we, you know, we're getting rid of all our teachers and not having any things for them to do during the summertime, you know, you would draw some kids in that definitely wouldn't have been headed down that path. So hopefully things get better soon.
Well, you know, maybe we'll have the chief on one day, and I know he's been pretty open to this type of stuff. And, you know, I think the subject came up with Doug and youth and gang, and I know our new chief had cited some statistics recently about the number of gang members and the correlation between education. And if they're illiterate at, I think, like 6 years old, you know, fourth or fifth grade or something like that, and the chances or the likelihood that they'd be involved in, you know, some sort of criminal activity is you know, it's mind-boggling. So, you know, we got a segment on education coming up. Maybe we could touch on that. But certainly, you know, keeping them busy and really just kind of having a foundation for success, I think, you know, I'll end it on that. And, you know, hopefully our next show we'll be able to touch on that.
Absolutely. And the chief knows a lot about gangs. I know he worked a gang unit back in the 80s. And really good detective in that field, and so he's an expert. And you know, we had him on the show during the Bike Fest, and he is open. So maybe we'll try to get him on in the future.
Yeah, cool.
Hey, you know what, Long Beach, we thank you for listening in. We're gonna going to cut out here a little bit early today. We're going to be back on. Well, I'll be back on Friday night at First Fridays. Thanks for listening to Soups World. We're here every Wednesday night from 9 o'clock on. And Peter and Ray, thanks a lot. Ray, thanks a lot for another great edition of The Buzz and another great guest.
Yep, thanks, Ray.
Thanks, you guys.
All right. Well, we got somebody. Somebody's got their hand up real quick. We'll take one last call. Here we go. Oh, he hung up. I knew who that was, too. Anyway, hey, thanks for listening in, everybody. And like I said, you can always find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, send us an email at soupsworld@gmail.com. Downloadable on iTunes for free if you miss any other past episode. Check us out Friday night, and we'll see you again next week. Good night, Long Beach.
Good night, all.
Hey, let me tell you about another friend of Soups World, the Long Beach Sunday Farmers Market in the Cal Heights area, located right there at Longfellow Elementary School at California Avenue and Bixby Road. You can't miss it. It only started in November of last year, and it's grown every week. Tons of vendors there, man. Fresh produce to die for. You got fresh produce, you got crafts, you got, what do you got, music, coffee. You know, some of the people who played there, you have Michelle Mangione's performed there, Robert John. If you haven't heard Robert John, you got to check him out. He's here quite a bit. Free cooking demonstrations by local chefs, crepes, you name it. And Swoop and Peter are there every week, teaching chess and providing chess boards for free chess play. Tons of things to do. Playground for the kids so the parents can go out there and shop. Great place to go. Long Beach Sunday Farmers Market, Longfellow Elementary School, corner of California Avenue and Bixby Road.